Welcome back in to the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason. Hey, got a great show for you today. I got Jason Izzo back. We're going to be talking about what's going on with the LA Dodgers persecuting Christ and his church and really participating in what happens every June where Christ and his church are persecuted by, you know, what they call Pride Month. Then we're going to talk about what Supich is doing wrong with Eucharistic adoration, Eucharistic revival, and what Diocese of Columbus is doing right. And also, we're going to talk about the sister in Missouri, which was, she's found, Sister Wilhelmina, found body found incorrupt. Again, evidence that if you live your life as a faithful Catholic, the evidence is there that your destination, I think it's heaven. Obviously, I think this is what another piece of evidence in God blessing us with evidence that Catholicism works. So we're going to talk about that. Hey, but before we get started, make sure you hit that like, that share, that sub, that notification bell, and all that good stuff. If you're listening to the show on the iTunes, make sure you leave me a good review. This show is being sponsored by our friends over at Hope is Fuel. It is a video-based conference that you can subscribe to. You get over 30 speakers speaking about the faith. Hope is Fuel is the name of the conference. If you use the coupon code David L. Gray, you get $20 off on the conference. So please support it if you are so indulged. So these are speakers who are not afraid to go against liberals. You know, liberals, so-called Catholics try to cancel this conference. These are the speakers who are still part of this conference who said, I'm not going to be blackmailed. I'm not going to be bullied. I'm not going to be driven away from doing what is good just because you don't like a couple people who are speaking in this video-based conference. So that is Hope is Fuel. Also, if you like your name, scrolling below, we got some new members. We got Michelle. We got Eric M. If you like to see your name scrolling below, consider becoming a patron on the show, either by becoming a YouTube member or in the description box below, just click on Patreon and see if you like the benefits. If you like them, become a member, and that'd be cool. Hey, without further ado, though, let's get into this show. I'm about to bring Jason in, and we're going to get rolling on the topics I just mentioned. Let's go.
Hovering over the skies of a post-Christian society, we have spotted a man with a donut in one hand and rosary beads in another.
Child, I'm about to whoop Satan's behind.
He is boldly proclaiming truth and reason like no rigid Catholic ever has before. The David L. Gray Show begins now.
It is the David L. Gray Show with Jason Izzold again. What's going on, Jason?
What's going on, man? I'm just busy trying to wrap up my school year, get my seniors graduated.
Whew. Yeah, man. We appreciate you, busy. Trying to get people become productive citizens out in this
world,
man.
Absolutely.
We appreciate that. Yeah, I was I've been teaching this course at my parish, the Introduction to the Theology of the Mass. So it's a four-part course. Just finished up part two today. And somehow you can relate to this being a teacher. So my day job, besides, you know, working at the parish, is being like a special ed teacher for like fifth graders, assistant to the teacher in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Being around these kids, man, I keep getting like these little colds, man. These little kids are like little carriers, man.
They are.
Jeez.
Yeah. Drink a lot of orange juice or something. Get a lot of vitamin C.
That's
what it is.
Yeah.
Those kids, they carry everything. And you're working with what? Middle school kids?
Yeah, so fifth graders.
Fifth graders? See, yeah. I'm working with high school, so they're not quite as germy in high school.
Yeah, they're just carrying around STDs, right? STDs, is that what they have?
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't going to say it. I'm glad you did. if you don't mind, I'm going to have a little bit of a beer here. I think I've deserved it after this week.
Yeah. You got the what is that, Bud Light? What you drinking?
No, Modelo. And I've got a Corona over here too. I'm not drinking Bud Light.
That's funny. So man, we got some all the guests are here. Natalie says thanks for covering this. Yeah, we're gonna hit the whole Pride Month thing kind of hard, coming in hot as soon as we get the show started. Lee says the communists are at war with the world. Natalie says, I need your prayers if I can ask. I am a trustee at a Catholic school trying hard to get a policy to stop pride flags in school. Customer says, in before the atheist and flight of flame war. I think, Jason, I think what Natalie says is an important point. Mm-hmm. In this regard, I'll start off like this, that there used to be a time that if you flags were flown as a sign of conquering a land, right? Mm-hmm. If you conquered a land or you landed on the moon, you marked your territory with your flag. It was a mark. But this is the first time in history, say what you want to about infiltrations and Freemasons and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. No country has ever flown a Masonic flag at their state house. Mm-hmm. What the LGBT people and their agenda has accomplished over the last 10 years, having their flag flown everywhere, I think is indicative
that
they have won amazing victories around the world.
Well, you know, we have this progressive political agenda, not just here in the United States, but around the world. And we're living in an anti-Christian society. Mm-hmm. So, or a post-Christian society, I should say, not necessarily anti, but post-Christian society, where governments are no longer run by religious bodies or influenced by religious bodies. They're influenced by the secular media. They're influenced by people who have the loudest voices. Right now, nobody wants to be viewed as intolerant, you know? So we're even seeing that in a lot of places within the Catholic Church. Natalia mentions that, you know, she's a trustee at a Catholic school trying to get a policy put in place to stop pride flags from being in their schools. My guess is, wherever she is, the pride flags have been allowed in the Catholic schools. And I taught for a year in a Catholic school here in Columbus, and I was amazed, if not appalled, by the sheer number of students who were sympathetic to the LGBT agenda. And sympathy, empathy is one thing. You know, as the Catechism teaches, you know, there is something is disordered here. It doesn't mean disordered in the sense of, like, you know, somebody's broken or whatever, mm-hmm. but it goes against the natural order of the natural law. And, you know, something isn't right here. And instead of trying to educate and catechize, we're, as Catholics, a lot of us are doing what the secular world is doing, and they're affirming people in their disorder. You know, they're affirming them in their sin. And again, in the public realm, we don't talk about sin the way we do in the church. But when people in the church are refusing to acknowledge sin, that's a problem. You know, and there's ways that we as faithful Catholics who love our fellow human being who was made in the image and likeness of God, just as we were, there's ways that we can show them empathy, and there's ways that we can love them, and there's ways that we can support them without saying that sin is not a sin.
Yeah.
I mentioned this either the last time or the first time I was on your show. I don't hate somebody because they sin differently than I do. The difference is I acknowledge that what I'm doing is sinful. and I'm seeking to become a better person. I'm seeking to not that sin or not sin as much or whatever the case may be, but I acknowledge that what I have done is sinful. The people in the LGBTQ community, especially those Catholics who are affirming them, are essentially saying, no, that's not a sin, or they're not acknowledging that what they're doing is sinful.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's like just great spiritual harm being done on our part. I think Catholics are completely being complicit in this whole thing. And Natalie says, thanks for, I appreciate your understanding of what's happening. It's going on, it's going to be the third year flying in June. And I think, Jason, what's going on here, though, is also, in addition to what you said, is so we had a divine moral law. And I think what's happened here for a number of reasons is the divine law, where we know what's good, what's true, has now been replaced with a just a natural law of feelings. It's not based upon the truth. It's not based upon divine revelation, but it's based upon what, you know, how I feel. And it's really ultimately is apathetic. It's a fake love.
It's not empathy. Doesn't care, it's apathy. About, and that's a very different thing.
Yeah, it's a fake love that doesn't care about the other's eternal destination, right?
Right.
True love desires the best for the other.
Right.
Fake love does not care whether you go to the heaven or hell. In fact, fake love, this apathetic love, it will send you to hell.
Right. And unfortunately, in this post-Christian society that we live in today, hell doesn't exist. Heaven doesn't exist.
Right.
We're, you know, we're just balls of energy, and when our energy runs out, that's it, you know? But you know, then we've got guys like, and I really hate to, you know, bash, you know, priests, bishops, etc. But when you've got somebody like Bishop Barron who says hell exists, but it's probably empty, you know, Jesus talked about there's going to be a wailing and gnashing of teeth.
Right.
Jesus talked about hell a lot,
yeah.
You know, and he said it's easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter heaven. You know, Jesus either, like C.S. Lewis said, he was either the Lord, a liar, or a lunatic.
Right.
And my money's on Lord. So Jesus wasn't lying. Hell is real. Hell exists. It's full of people. As I think St. Ignatius of Antioch, or one of the St. Ignatius, has said, hell is paved with the skulls of bad bishops. The place exists. And
this is the place that we're at, though, Jason. We're living in such a post-truth society, post-Christian society, however you want to call it, that the state, which was probably at one point in time, probably the most, one of these most Catholic states, so many cities named after Catholic, you know, things that are just part of the Catholic culture, part of our sacraments, part of our divine life, the city of Sacramento, the city of angels, city of, you know, the cities named after saints, San Diego, just California, just littered with these names. Based upon, you know, the Franciscan missionaries that were there, the Catholics who went there at the founding of the state. Mm-hmm. But now the angels, this Los Angeles is talking about now, it's no longer the angels that Mary is the queen of angels. It's no longer talking about those angels. Mm-hmm. Los Angeles is named after the fallen angels. I mean, what's going on there now?
Yeah.
The city of the fallen angels, the Satans, Satan and his demons, is that the L.A. Dodgers, you know, first they were for it, then they're against it, now they're for it again. This so-called nonprofit group called the Sisters of Perpetual Adoration,
perpetual indulgence.
I said adoration.
We're
talking about adoration later. Yeah.
We're talking about adoration later, right?
Yeah, but the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Yeah, so they're a nonprofit group, Jason. They've been around since the late 70s. Yeah, they do a lot of work raising money for HIV and AIDS crisis centers. They do all this thing. But Jason, check this out from their Wikipedia page before, you know, I'm going to let you go on this topic about what the Dodgers are doing. But check this out from their Wikipedia page. So they're a global organization. They have these chapters all around the world. They're abbeyists. They have the character of actually being some sort of convent. They have an abbey. And her, I don't know. It could be a whatchamacallit. I don't even know what's going on here. But their name is called Sister Guardian Inopansies. Guard Inopansies. The mistress is Sister Belladonna. The treasurer, Sister Gaia Love. So the whole thing is just a demonic play on what is good and true. And the LA Dodgers, right, they're about to honor this group for their work in June. They're going to honor them during Pride Month for their LGBT+ advocacy. So what's going on here, man?
I don't know. First things first, it was St. John Chrysostom that said the floor of hell is paved with bad bishops. Okay. Skulls of bad bishops. I wanted to correct myself because I had said St. Ignatius. But as far as the Dodgers go, this is just one more example of somebody who is hateful and blasphemous toward Christianity, Catholics specifically, who are being honored and rewarded for their bad behavior. There's no way that a Christian or Catholic group who was seen as taunting another group of people would be honored in the same way.
That's a good point. Are you saying that you can't do this to any other group of Catholics?
You can't do this to any other group. Christians more widely, but specifically, you see still a lot of like anti-Catholicism around. And maybe that's because us as Catholics tend to be more outspoken about, you know, the issues that are embraced by the left. I don't know. But, you know, it's like it'd be one thing if this group didn't dress up like religious sisters and call themselves, you know, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence or whatever. You know, the fact that they've done good work, you know, there's a lot of Catholic groups that have also done a lot of work for people suffering from AIDS, people suffering from mental illness, homelessness, all these other things, you know. So the fact that they do good work for a specific minority or group or afflicted group, great, more power to them. I applaud them for the work they do. I don't applaud them for the image that they put forward. This, you know, dressing up like religious sisters, traditional religious sisters at that, you know, with full habit and everything else. It'd be one thing if they were dressing up like, you know, the modern pantsuit sisters. You know, nobody would even know that they look like nuns.
Yeah, sisters on the bus. Yeah,
right. Nuns on a bus. Yeah, but you know, they dress the part, the very recognizable part of a traditional religious sister, and completely blaspheme what the call for a woman religious really is. Yeah. You know, especially at a time in our church where the numbers of women religious are lower than they've ever been. Having a group like them doing what they're doing is just a bad look.
Yeah.
It's a really bad look.
Jennifer says we need a Catholic bishop to lead all Catholics in a boycott in MLB, Major League Baseball. And you just know that's not going to happen.
It's
something that is, I mean, it's interesting, just not, you know, more about a month ago, Bud Light put out this, you know, they hired the guy, you know, the whatchamacallit, to, you know, do some sort of promo for, you know, they were celebrating him. This. I'm not going to mention his name because YouTube was watching me. But, you know, he's a whatchamacallit, dressing as a woman. And there is like complete outrage. Bud Light still has not recovered. And I like the city of St. Louis. I toured a Bud Light facility, had a really, I don't even drink beer, but Bud Light out of like fresh out of the thing. It was like one of the best things I've ever tasted. So I feel bad for the city of St. Louis. It's a staple there. People's jobs are affected.
Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch has lost over $6
billion.
$6 billion already.
Yeah. And but that's not going to happen in this case. But it's interesting, though, Jason, that LA Dodgers. So here's the thing, Jason. LA Dodgers saw what happened with Bud Light, and they said, "You know what? You know, give me some of that. Give me some of that because our target is not white Christian males. Our target is not conservative males. You know, we're not going to attack them. We're not going to attack America. Who we're going to attack is Catholics, and the Catholics aren't going to do crap about it." Because their bishops don't stand for anything. What do you think?
Right. Well, you know, we've had some bishops speak out. Archbishop Cardiglione in San Francisco has spoken out. In fact, let me pull it up here real quick. I was looking at it earlier today. He said, "Our Catholic sisters devote themselves to serving others selflessly. Decent people would not mock and blaspheme them. So now we know what gods the Dodger administration worships. Open desecration and anti-Catholicism is not disqualifying. Disappointing, but not surprising. Gird your loins." So, you know, Archbishop Cardiglione, he had some strong words about, you know, the Dodgers. You know, and it's just somebody like Cardiglione could probably try to initiate some kind of a boycott. I don't know how far it would go. Again, he's the one who told Nancy Pelosi she couldn't receive communion, but the Archbishop in Washington, D.C., where she lives most of the time, didn't acknowledge that, you know? Although it's not Washington's Archbishop's duty to excommunicate her. It's the bishop in the diocese where she permanently resides, which is San Francisco. When we have bishops that aren't honoring what other bishops have done, you're not going to see much in the way of the faithful listening to a couple of good bishops for something like this. Because you're going to have Gregory in D.C. You're going to have Supich in Chicago. You're going to have Tobin in New Jersey, who are going to probably celebrate Pride Month, you know.
Yeah, they're going to, I mean, we're going, and that's the thing. I think that's the thing that the real deal say here. We should have boycotted day one of Pride Night back in the day and not wait for this thing to get worse. Because here's what's going to happen, Jason. We see it everywhere, every year. You're going to have parishes everywhere, you know, where the Democrats win elections in Seattle, in New York, in Chicago. Anywhere Democrats run elections, you're going to see Catholic churches marching in these so-called pride parades.
Right.
In this June, which is dedicated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, this is like a hallowed month for us Catholics. And Jason, this month is unique in that we have all of our movable feasts in this month as well. So coming up on a fourth, right after Pentecost. Coming up on the 4th, we have the Solemnity of the Holy Trinity. On the 11th, Solemnity of the Body and Blood of Christ.
Actually on the 8th for us traditional Catholics.
There you go. and then on the 16th, you have the Solemnity of the Most Sacred Heart of Jesus. You had a Solemnity of John the Baptist on the 24th. The Solemnity of Peter and Paul on the 29th, the Memorial of the Immaculate Heart of Mary on the 17th. This month, June, where the LA Dodgers are like giving the middle finger to Catholics.
They are.
It is one of is a very sacred month in our tradition. And every year, every year it's a hallowed month. But I think the point was made correct earlier that the world feels very comfortable attacking Christ and his church because they see that the Satan has done a marvelous work, you know, from his perspective of dividing us on the truth, you know, at least the appearance, because we have bishops, like you said,
right,
that are going to be doing their thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's part of it. And then you also have this, there's a lot of Christians, both Protestant and a lot of Catholics, who, you know, have this notion that, you know, Christ is going to forgive our sins no matter what we do. Mm-hmm. We've been washed clean by the blood of Christ. Yes, we have. But we have to acknowledge the presence of sin, both in our lives and in the world. And we can't just do whatever we want and not have any consequences. What did Jesus say to the woman caught in adultery? He said, go and sin no more.
Yeah.
I do not condemn you. Go and sin no more. So we can't continue to sin and not expect to be condemned. You know, we can't embrace sin in the world and not expect to be condemned for it.
Yeah.
You know, even if I personally don't have any grave sin on my soul that I'm aware of, if I turn a blind eye to sin in my community, if I don't speak out against it, if I don't try to educate others on it, do my part to evangelize and catechize those around me, I might as well be sinning, you know? What did Jesus say? You know, let one who leads another into sin, you know, tie a millstone around his neck and cast himself into the sea. You know, if I'm watching others sin and I'm not speaking out,
right,
I whether overtly or covertly, I'm allowing them to sin without trying to educate them. Now,
yeah, and Ezekiel says concerning the watchman, I think it's chapter 34, Ezekiel, the watchman, it's worse off for you that you know better, yet you didn't say anything because that's apathy. And that's what this is all about. You know, the pride flag in a pride month is an outright rejection of Christ and his church. It's an outright celebration of sin. It's an outright attack on children. It's normalizing all types of sexual depravity amongst children. You see them at these pride things. You see these flags flying at these schools. It's teaching our children that it's okay to be apathetic, it's okay to sin. Everything that the pride month stands for is unhealthy, both spiritually and physically,
and just
health-wise. There's nothing good about that lifestyle.
I get it.
Like you said earlier, I get it. These people are just trying to figure it out. They just don't have the tools to figure out how to be in this world. And they have a courage issue. They have a God complex by essentially saying that even though I did not create myself, I'm going to set my own destination. And that's a God complex, you know. So I really feel bad for these people who celebrate what is an attack on Christ and his church, an outright attack against God. I feel bad for them. But we need to pray for them.
Well, and you know, I kind of lost where I was going. But the pride flag, first and foremost, is it takes God's covenant with man through Noah and gives it two middle fingers. You know, God gave the rainbow to Noah as a sign of his covenant that humanity would be spared.
Yeah.
You know? And on top of that, you have Pride Month, pride, one of the seven deadly sins, you know, is being celebrated as like a victory over what, you know? I mean, it just, it doesn't make sense to me that we would celebrate pride, one of the seven deadly sins, as some, you know, great.
Yeah. Virtue or something.
Virtue,
like that.
Exactly. It's the exact opposite.
This is the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason, on with Jason Izell today, regular guest on the show. And thanks for all your comments. Thanks for everyone coming in. We got Admiral Thory here. Hounds of Heaven are here. Amanda. The Real Deal is also talking about something they used to do at the field, but no more. Admiral Thory said, notice how I progressed from being gay pride to a pre. Yeah, yeah, that's true. But let's transition to something else related.
I'm not transitioning.
Yeah, good catch.
Sorry, good had catch. To say it. Had yeah, to say catch. It. All yeah. right. Next topic.
Yeah. So last time you were on the show, we were talking about how America's Pope, I like to call him Cardinal Supich, had how he was doing the Eucharistic revival all wrong. Mm-hmm. Because part of the Eucharistic procession that was going all around the United States was coming through Chicago. Mm-hmm. And Supich was like, no, not under my watch. You know, you guys aren't going to, you're not going to process anything through my town. You know, one of the worst cities in America, in the world. But you just sent me an image. I want to pull this up.
Sure, go ahead.
What's going on in Columbus? And I thought this was an example of your bishop doing the Eucharistic revival right.
Yes, my bishop. And I will proudly call this man my bishop, Earl K. Fernandez. He is doing Eucharistic revival the right way. As Catholics, and you know a lot of people who have read a lot of my writings, they know I am not a huge fan of Vatican II. However, one thing that Vatican II got very, very right is that the Eucharist is the source and summit of the Christian life. And that comes from Lumen Gentium chapter 11, all right, or paragraph 11. So if the Eucharist is the source and summit of the Christian life, then we need to adore the Eucharist. We need to adore Christ in the Eucharist. Supich, when the procession goes through Chicago next July 2024, he's not going to allow the Eucharist to be exposed. They may still process through the city, but they can't expose the Eucharist. Part of what we do as Catholics, our Eucharistic piety, is adoring Christ in the host. Because we believe that Jesus is present, body, blood, soul, and divinity, in that tiny white host. Okay? So what Bishop Fernandez is doing here in the Diocese of Columbus is beginning June 2nd, so beginning next Friday, and running until June 11th, the following Sunday, which is when the Novus Ordo celebrates Corpus Christi, he is going to be participating in 11 Eucharistic processions over the course of 10 days, where he himself will be leading the Eucharistic procession with the Eucharist exposed in the monstrance. He will also be on June 8th, which is the traditional feast of Corpus Christi. He will be participating in Mass at St. Leo's, which is our local apostolate of the Institute of Christ the King Sovereign Priest, which is a full-time Latin Mass parish. So he will be participating in what's known as a solemn high Mass with pontifical assistance at the throne. Bishop Fernandez won't be celebrating the Mass, but he will be present and he will be active in a very noticeable way. There's a solemn reception of the bishop that occurs at the back of the church right before Mass begins. The bishop leads the procession into the church. The bishop leads the prayers at the foot of the altar which are the beginning prayers in the traditional Latin Mass. The bishop will bless the incense, both before the gospel as well as before the consecration. He will also bless the subdeacon before he reads the epistle. He'll bless the deacon before he reads the gospel. He'll also offer a pontifical blessing at the end of Mass. Then he will lead our procession through Marion Village, which is just south of German Village in Columbus, Ohio. So a very different perspective on Eucharistic piety than what Cardinal Supich has. So
Supich, he's done Eucharistic adoration and the whole Eucharistic revival so bad that you have a Democrat in Chicago say, come on, man, you're doing Catholicism as an Archbishop and Cardinal all wrong. Mm-hmm. You have a Democrat who wants the Institute of Christ the King, the oratory or the church they restored there wants the whole community back, right?
Right. Yes. So, Chicago alderman, Jeanette Taylor, the alderman, I believe, is like the head of the city council there in Chicago, who's a Democrat, actually, I believe a Democratic socialist, by the way, recently wrote a letter to Cardinal Supich advocating for the resumption of the traditional Latin Mass community at the Shrine of Christ the King. Jeanette's reasoning, Alderman Taylor's reasoning, I'm going to be polite and respectful. Alderman Taylor's reasoning isn't because she's necessarily a fan of the traditional Latin Mass, but the traditional Latin Mass community that goes to Mass at the Shrine of Christ the King in Chicago, in the Woodlawn neighborhood, is very good for the neighborhood. They frequent businesses in that neighborhood. A lot of the money that's raised by the shrine is then put back into that neighborhood. So she's probably looking at it from more of a social justice standpoint, what's good for the neighborhood economically, socially, etc. But at the same time, you have to think the impact that losing this traditional Latin Mass community has had in Chicago has been great enough that a Democratic socialist is supporting the resumption of liturgical practice at the Shrine of Christ the King. That shows how dedicated traditional Latin Mass Catholics are to their church and to the greater community. When an entire neighborhood is negatively impacted by a group of faithful being barred from their community, that says something.
Yeah. And that's been like and I talked about this before in a video I did about what they call white flight and, you know, so-called bourgeois black flight, that through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, we saw people with families, people with values, people who were a religious people, people who are hardworking, both we will say middle class whites and also well-to-do blacks as well. They got up after, and it really hit a large, a big flux of them after Martin Luther King Jr. Was assassinated, and there was a lot of just uproar and destruction and riots and everything that we saw really with the Black Lives Matter a couple years ago. The same thing happened after Martin Luther King died. A lot of things going on in the cities, and people got up and left. They left in droves all the way up into the 80s, and they established, you know, these suburban communities. What also happened, though, when people took their stable families, their stable jobs, their stable income, their religious values, when they up and left these cities, something had to fill that vacuum, and we saw what filled that vacuum. It was gangs, it was drugs, it was what left was, you know, people had good morals and values, and now just the law of the streets just occupying. So we saw an increase in prisons, we saw an increase in policing, we saw an increase of poor schools, we saw property values drop, which made schools poor. It was just a cycle, Jason, right? And so And so this alderman, I think she I don't know if she's connecting all that, but what she does is that she gets it, that mm-hmm. when you have stable families coming into this to this neighborhood who may not mm-hmm. live there, but come into this neighborhood to worship, and they're spending money there, they're increasing the property values there. There's a lot of benefit when you have good people of good moral value and character come into a neighborhood and make it more stable and safe. And Chicago mm-hmm. needs that. I think yeah. she gets it.
Right. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Woodlawn is on the south side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the yep. south side yep. of Chicago is known probably not only nationwide, but worldwide
yeah.
as probably one of the most violent segments yes. of yes. any city anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And yet you have this faithful group of people who not only every Sunday, but many of them come every single day to you know, worship God in the traditional Latin Mass when they don't have to. They don't have to go into these violent areas, but they do. And they support the businesses yeah. that are there,
yeah.
you know. And you see this in most big cities where they have a traditional Latin Mass parish. They tend to be in more rundown,
yeah.
impoverished,
yeah.
violent areas.
And yeah.
it's just because that's where the older churches that are yeah. were designed with, you know, when the Latin Mass was still a thing, that's yeah. where they are, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that, you know, maybe Stupich will listen to some of the people who.
Did you call him Stupich?
Think like him? Not Stupich. No. I did not. You said that, not me.
It sounded like that. Maybe super. That's just my ears. But that was a
it must
good
be
one
your
that.
Ears. But hopefully he'll listen to others who think like him and realize that, you know, if he's not going to do it to save the Latin Mass, hopefully he'll do it to save the Woodlawn community, you know? Yeah. And yeah. even if he does it to save the Woodlawn community, the traditional Latin Mass still wins because those people in Chicago that are devoted to the traditional Latin Mass get to stay in Chicago to worship according to the traditional Latin Mass instead of driving over to Indiana to do it.
Speaking of that part of that time zone, a central time zone, about mm-hmm. 6 or 7 hours down the road, something pretty powerful people are taking notice of. I'll pull this screen up here from I was surprised to see this on the Black Catholic Messenger. This is a site that is, you know, talks about issues that are predominantly regarding culturally Black Catholics. And so they had everybody sort of in the Twitterverse and online who or more traditional. We knew about this for a few days, and I complained on Twitter. I said, how come no leftists and no Black Catholics are even talking about this? And then lo and behold, the Black Catholic Messenger publishes something today. But this story, Jason, is I thought was really interesting. So her mm-hmm. name is Mother Mary Wilhelmina Lancaster. She's a Benedictine Sisters of Mary, Queen of Apostles. And mm-hmm. here's how the story starts. So Mother Mary Wilhelmina Lancaster died in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And her body was exhumed this spring by the Benedictine Sisters of Mary, Queen of Apostles, a group known in recent years for their best-selling chant albums.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lancaster founded a covenant in Pennsylvania after leaving the Oblate Sisters of Providence. And so her body was being moved into a monastery chapel near the Feast of Ascension, near the day of her death, when the sisters discovered mm-hmm. that it was incorrupt. It would be the right term.
Incorrupt, yes.
And so that needs to be examined. But under the layer of mold due to condensation. So they dig up her body.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. I also saw another story about how her body was not, they didn't put any of the embalming fluids in it.
She was not embalmed. No,
she was not embalmed. And also due to some sort of issues that her casket, whatever, was cracked. So there was actually water getting in there. So
water and dirt, everything else. Yeah.
So all the conditions were in place
for her to just rot. Yeah.
For her to just rot. And yet she hasn't. And I thought this was incredible. Over the past couple of weeks, I had traveled to Lourdes, but on the way to Lourdes and on the way back, I saw the incredible body of St. John Vianney and I saw the incredible body of St. Bernadette. And these are things I read about and I saw them in person. And I was always impressed by the incorrupt bodies of Catholic saints because I thought that was the best evidence, Jason, that Catholicism works. I mean, the saints themselves, obviously, the saints themselves are evidence that Catholicism works. But the incorrupt body of so many of our saints is evidence. I hope that Sister Wilhelmina, I hope this sparks a cause of canonization for her.
Right.
What did you think when you first read this story?
Well, I thought it was quite fantastic, actually, for several reasons. Number one, anytime that we can potentially recognize or canonize another saint is cause for celebration. One thing I learned in the last couple of days regarding all this is she is the first African American to be determined to be incorrupt.
Yeah.
So we have some African American saints, we have some African American blesseds, but none that have been deemed incorrupt. And the thing about incorrupt that people need to understand is it doesn't mean that you open their casket and they look like you and I do right now. That's not what that means. I saw the pictures and it looked like some fingers were missing off of one of her hands and things like that. But it means that their body has not experienced the amount or type of decay that would be expected given, the length that she's been buried. For instance, especially in her situation, there was a crack in the casket. There was water, soil, other things getting in. There were, of course, if water and soil was getting in, there had to be bugs getting in. They could have had a feast, but they didn't. It was interesting that there was like this layer of like mold that was covering her body. And, some of your naysayers are going to say, oh, well, that mold is what kept her body from corrupting further. But
I don't know. Is that how mold works? I don't know.
The mold would have been covering her body. It would have kept oxygen and other things probably from doing its job. But my question is, who put the mold there? God allowed that mold to form, to form over her body once the casket was broken to keep her body from decaying. So, again, it's a work of God. God put the mold there to keep her body from decaying. That's what I would say to somebody who wants to say, oh, well, it's the mold that stopped her body from decaying. Okay, well, God put the mold there in order for that to happen.
And that's still asking for a lot. I mean, that's a good response to that. It's obviously God's providence, and that's true. But it's still asking for a lot because the decay not only happens on the outside, but also happens
on the inside
as well.
Now, so. I don't know, like when they exhumed her body, I don't know if they opened her body up to see if her organs were decayed or not. But again, incorruptibility does not mean that the entire body is free of decay.
Right.
It just means that the body has not decayed at the rate in which it would be expected the body to decay.
And Adam Authoria, she's asking, which she says, is this the first incorrupt in the United States?
I don't know in the United States. I think
neither. Maybe, I couldn't find any.
Terry Tekakwitha might have been incorrupt. I don't remember for sure. Who's that? I don't know about Elizabeth Ann Seton. She may have been incorrupt. I'm not 100% sure. But she's definitely not the first. But she, I believe, is the first African-American to be deemed incorrupt.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
Of course, one of the things I love about Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster, or Mother Wilhelmina Lancaster, is that she was devoted to the traditional Latin Mass. So
yeah,
anytime that, I can throw the TLM in there, I'm going to do it. Because
yeah, you know, that's a big thing as well. That I mean, here, not only is this evidence that Catholicism works, you know, potentially, like I said, it still has to be investigated. But I mean, so the score, I mean, the game has, so if we call it a game, it's been in play for about 50 or so years since the Novus Ordo came online. All right. So and so the traditional Latin Mass, the Reformed Roman Rite, whatever you want to call it, is still like kicking butt, man. I mean, as far as saints, as far as like incorrupt saints, I mean, who does the Novus Ordo have? Mario Cutis? Is that who they have now? Is that who's starting on that team? Is that all they got?
I don't know. I mean... well, I mean, because think about it. Even John Paul II, Paul VI, Benedict XVI, who's not a saint yet, but I believe one day he will be.
Yeah,
they started in the original Roman Rite. It wasn't you know, until later that they were celebrating the Novus Ordo. I mean, you know, Paul VI brought it in, and you know, John Paul II, you know, obviously celebrated the Novus Ordo because that was the ordinary form of the Mass at the time. But they both were formed in the traditional Latin Mass.
So the Roman Rite is still kicking butt, man.
It is.
So I mean, of course, we're going to give the Novus Ordo some time. I mean, the traditional Latin Mass, you know, has had, you know, a few, you know, thousands of years, right? So it's
more or less, you know, at least with the traditional Latin Mass, it was organically developed over time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And there were changes that occurred over time. Yeah. Some things were added, some things were taken away, but there wasn't this, you know, thing that just all of a sudden happened overnight.
Right.
Where you were doing one thing today and tomorrow you're doing something totally different, which is really what happened at Advent 1969 when the Novus Ordo was instituted.
Yeah, so
granted, you know, there was this transitional Mass where more of the Mass was being said in English than, you know, blah, 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 blah. But it was really Advent 1969 where something major happened. And it had never occurred in the liturgy up to that point.
Yeah, so what happened in 1570 with Pius the Fifth? I mean, he the Roman Rite had already been in play for
the Roman Rite, had been in place since at least 750.
Yeah, so it's kind of it was largely local, but what had happened was I think the what was reformed about it once he makes it a mass of the church is they would say that some Gallican influence, which means you know some. It was, you know, some pieces were added, which would come from the Gallican rites. You know, we're talking about the British Isles. We're talking about, you know, Gaul. Places like that were sort of added to it, but it's still largely a local Roman rite. And but from 1570 on, that had been the worship. It was exported throughout the world.
Right.
And countless saints. Well, I guess not countless. Yeah, countless. But canonized saints, there is a count. But just countless saints that's the Mass that they worshiped in. So we'll see how many saints that the Novus Ordo rite produces, but I have a suspicion that because it demands very little, that is going to produce very little. That's just
well, and you have to remember though too, under the new guidelines for canonization, it's not as stringent as they used
to
be. So, but again, even most of the saints that have been canonized recently were saints who had some early life exposure or complete life exposure to the traditional Latin Mass. I think you're right. Carlo Acutis may be the first saint who did not grow up with or experience the traditional Latin Mass. Might be one of the first.
Jennifer says she read a story talking about Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster saying that the other sisters had hand dug and hand filled her grave, which is very, very interesting. So they're not embalming the sisters at all.
No, they're just probably putting
these aren't
them in
really
a
even high tech
cheap wooden box, which is probably why it cracked the way it did. like a pine box, and you know, and again, I believe they're cloistered, so you know they're not gonna put a lot of money into a large celebration. They're not gonna put a lot of money into, you know, a casket. They're gonna put them in a simple pine box. They're gonna bury them. There's probably not like a concrete tomb liner or anything like that. They're probably just putting them in, you know.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
So
let me check something real quick, because that Mathurius said I did a quick Google search, couldn't find any U.S. Saints some money and corruptibles. I'm about to ask artificial intelligence real quick, Jason.
ChatGPT, let's do it. But no, and again,
nah, I like Bing. I like Bing, man, because they give me footnotes.
You like Bing? But, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I wasn't sure if Kateri Tekakwitha or Elizabeth Ann Seton or some of the other American saints were necessarily incorruptible or not. But I'm curious if her cause for canonization moves forward. I wonder if her devotion to the traditional Latin Mass will slow down her cause.
Oh, man, sure did slow down Bishop Sheen. I mean, that's...
It did. And don't get me wrong, Bishop Sheen, he did, you know, celebrate the Novus Ordo as well, but he was very much a traditional guy. Even though he was celebrating the Novus Ordo, he definitely did not preach like a Novus Ordo priest. You know, Padre Pio, I don't think he ever celebrated the Novus Ordo, even though he didn't die until, what, the mid-late 70s. He stuck true to the TLM, I believe.
And this one, AI over at Bing is saying, it says, according to, let me see, I'll put this on a screen here. Give me one moment.
Sure.
All right. So it says, according to the search results, there are three saints who were born in the United States of America: Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton, Saint Kateri Tekakwitha, and Saint Catherine Drexel. So that was my search parameter. I said born in the United States. It says, however, okay, none of them are listed among incorrupt saints, who are saints whose bodies are miraculously preserved after death, defying the normal process of decomposition. Therefore, it seems that there are no saints born in the United States who are incorrupt. So that's it. You're not going to always change the parameters, but at least amongst those who are born, I guess that those would be the three. And they, those three were,
I don't know why I forgot Catherine Drexel, but yeah.
So, and very, very, okay, very, very interesting, man.
Yeah, very absolutely.
Yeah. This is the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason, Jason Izold. Jason, how can people get a hold of your writings, man?
They can find my writings at Catholic365.com. I haven't written for a while, but I've got three or four articles that I'm working on right now. I'm going to write an article regarding the Eucharist procession coming up on June 8th at St. Leo's with our bishop. And I've got a couple other articles that I've been kicking around that I just haven't had the time to put out with everything I've got going on with my day job. I'm trying to get inner city kids graduated. So that has been a higher priority than continuing to write. So
amen.
We have graduation next Friday, so I'll have more time to write after that. But they can find my writings at Catholic365.com.
Catholic365.com, and that's Jason Izold, Izolt. You can find him there. And Jason, we gotta figure something out, man, because I'll be in Columbus in June around the 20-something, and we gotta connect, man. We might do a show from your backyard. Who knows?
Come over to the house. We'll light a fire and we'll drink a few adult beverages.
Sounds good. This is the David L. Gray Show. Jason Izolt, the guest. Thanks for coming on, Jason. And thanks, everybody, for coming in and hanging out with us today. And if I don't have Jason back before we try to do a live in June, he'll be back on as soon as he, you know, graduates some, you know, some teenager, man. Get some more time. Thanks, Jason.
All right. Thank you so much.
And blessings and shalom to you and to yours. Thanks for tuning in.